Now, you had a warning last week that things are going to be a little bit different as we go through this series. Some are going to be very much science-oriented, whether it's when we get to whether or not humans have evolved. Today is going to be one of those science-type messages, and so it's going to seem a little different than what you're used to. But as we said last week, there's a reason why this is important. And the reason is that kids by the boatload are walking away from their faith because of issues such as this. Now, who here has heard of the Big Bang Theory? Anyone not heard of the Big Bang Theory? Okay, it's ubiquitous. It's part of our cultural landscape. Now, put up your hand if you actually know what the Big Bang Theory is. Okay, that's a little bit fewer hands. But it's part of the fabric of our culture. Everybody just assumes that it's true, except for a minority, and that being generally evangelical Christians. A large group of so-called evangelicals are now embracing the Big Bang Theory. And they believe that Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, in fact, teaches it. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And they believe that God did that through the Big Bang Theory. And so they would also embrace the billions of years involved in it. These would include people like Bruce Waltke, who is a proponent of theistic evolution. In other words, evolution is true, but God is the guiding force behind it. Another view is called progressive creationism. Hugh Ross, from Reasons to Believe Ministry, a Canadian astronomer, teaches the Big Bang Theory and believes that God created in chunks. He created progressively over a long period of time. And he actually says he believed in the Big Bang Theory before becoming a Christian, read Genesis chapter 1, thought, hey, the Big Bang Theory, and became a Christian. Well, things aren't quite what they seem. Let's begin with a little touch of epistemology. Epistemology is the branch of philosophy whereby we know how we know something. How do we know that we know something? Well, when it comes to cosmology, how the universe began, things are much more philosophical than the evolutionary cosmologists, astrophysicists want you to know. They want you to believe that they've whipped this up in a laboratory somewhere and they can prove that it happened. However, this is George Ellis. George Ellis is one of the leading cosmologists in the world. He's written papers with Stephen Hawking and others. He would be a senior scholar. He was interviewed in Scientific American in October 1995, and he says, people need to be aware that there is a range of models that could explain the observations. That is, you look through a telescope, you see the world, the universe, you see different things. And Ellis says, for instance, I can construct you a spherically symmetrical universe with Earth at its center, and you cannot disprove it based on observations. You have to understand that Big Bang doesn't want the universe to have a center at all. They don't want the Earth to be in a privileged position at all. In fact, that's abhorrent to them. Yet Ellis says, mathematically, I can create this model and you can't disprove it at all by observations. Now, the point I want to hone on here is what he continues to say. He says, you can only exclude it on philosophical grounds. In my view, there is absolutely nothing wrong in that. What I want to bring into the open is the fact that we are using philosophical criteria in choosing our models. A lot of cosmology tries to hide that. Here is an honest cosmologist telling us, listen, in order to create our models, whether it's the Big Bang model, the steady state model, whatever model it is, there's philosophy involved. There are philosophical reasons for choosing that particular model. It's not just data and all of a sudden, whew, we have to believe in the Big Bang. No, there are philosophical undergirdings which they're trying to corroborate the data to fit that philosophical premise. And the number one starting point for those who created the Big Bang model is there is no God. The universe came into existence out of nothing. It happened. So the vast majority of Big Bang cosmology or cosmology in general is anti-God. In a technical paper written by Richard Liu, the Department of Physics, he's an astrophysicist at the University of Alabama, he comes out and actually comes clean and says this. He says, astronomy can never be a hardcore physics discipline because the universe offers no control experiment, i.e. with no independent checks, it is bound to be highly ambiguous and degenerate. Cosmology is not even astrophysics. All the principal assumptions in this field are unverified or unverifiable in the laboratory. And researchers are quite comfortable with inventing unknowns to explain the unknown. He continues on and says, whether the subject matter is as fundamental as time and space or something more mundane, astronomical observations can never by themselves be used to prove beyond reasonable doubt a physical theory. This is because we live in only one universe. This is called cosmic variance, if you're taking notes. Cosmic variance means we have one universe and we have nothing to compare it to. So there's no experiment that can be performed on the universe because you have no checks and balances. You have nothing to compare it with to see whether it's true or not. The indispensable control experiment is not available. There is no possibility of flipping this switch or turning that knob. Is that what you hear in the popular media? This is not a creationist. This is a man who is giving his life to try to figure it out apart from God. Another example. Dr. Adrian Cho, writing in Science magazine, and he's going to quote a scholar here. Cosmology may look like a science, but it isn't a science, says James Gunn of Princeton University, co-founder of the Sloan Survey. Next week we'll learn what the Sloan survey is. He says, a basic tenet of science is that you can do repeatable experiments and you can't do that in cosmology. In fact, they go on, they explain that really it's more like forensic science or historical science when you're just trying to piece together the past from the evidence you have. But there is nothing they can do in a laboratory to create a cosmology. In fact, there's another article where the writers go on and they basically tell you, listen, all this is math. It's people sitting at computers coming up with mathematical models. And they try to fit the data they can into their mathematical models. So what is the Big Bang Theory anyways? Well, this is how NASA tried to illustrate the Big Bang Theory. You see the timeline, they're pretty precise, 13.77 billion years ago. That's just been updated, their old one said 13.7. Basically what happens is they believe that there was nothing. And then that nothing fluctuated. And when it fluctuated, it became energy and matter. So nothing became energy and matter. Now that bang, because basically it's an expansion. We use the word explosion, but really it's an expansion. And it's not an expansion into space, it's actually space itself expanding. So at that creation moment, time, matter, energy, and space came into existence. Before that, there was nothing. Now, because of problems that you're going to see next week in Big Bang cosmology, the Big Bang wasn't a big enough bang, and so they had to have a bigger bang. And that's the part there where it says inflation. Basically, a trillion times the universe expanded, faster than the speed of light. Much, 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 much faster. So it becomes something infinitesimally small to light years across in an instant. And we're going to see that there are reasons for this. There's at least three major reasons that the Big Bang has to have inflation. And if it doesn't happen, then the model crumbles. So, what happens is we start having subatomical particles being created out of the energy. You may have heard of E equals mc squared. Okay, that's Einstein, one of his formula. Energy equals mass times the square of the speed of light. C is the constant for the speed of light. What it really means is that you get a lot of energy out of a little bit of matter. However, the formula can be reversed, and matter can convert to energy. So what happens in the Big Bang model is you have energy, it begins to convert to matter, and it's going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and eventually you start getting the subatomic particles. So you know what an atom is? Well, atoms are made up of other things. And some of those other things, like protons and neutrons, are made up of other things. Protons and neutrons are made up of things called quarks. So these things start coming into existence, and then as things cool, eventually you get stable atoms and things like this, and over time. And you'll see that thing that's kind of sideways, and it looks almost like a globe. It's got blue and green and red. That's supposed to be the afterglow of the bomb going off. It's the radiation, which you've probably heard called the cosmic background radiation. So this is one of the things they think they can detect nowadays, and it's one of the things we're going to see is an argument for the Big Bang. Then you have the Dark Ages, which is basically you have a transparent cloud of gas expanding, because all the Big Bang can create is hydrogen atoms, helium atoms, lithium atoms, and deuterium atoms. So if you've ever seen a periodic table and there's 100 and some odd elements on there, the Big Bang can only produce 4 of them. That's it. The rest of them, they argue, come from stars. So in the cores of stars, they argue that through that intense heat and pressure that helium converts to hydrogen, and then through exploding stars and these sorts of things, we get the rest of the atoms in the periodic table. But in the Dark Ages, it's dark because there's really no structure in the universe. In fact, the universe is, for a while, is what's called opaque. It's you can't see through it. Light can't even get out of it. And then it becomes transparent. And then they argue that out of these little density waves, just little waves, okay, like shock waves, so you drop a pebble in the water and you get the ripples. So these little microscopic ones, and those things end up forming stars and galaxies. And then 13.7 billion years later, here we are. Now that's, in a nutshell, the Big Bang Theory. What is the actual evidence for it, though? What leads people to come to this conclusion? Well, there's three of them. The first one is the argument that the universe is expanding. I'm sure all of you have heard that. A few years ago, they actually started saying not only is it expanding, but it's accelerating. It's expanding faster than it was before. So now they've created another fudge factor, something that doesn't exist in reality, but they argue that it does, called dark energy. And they think it's like anti-gravity, and it's pushing everything out faster and faster. Well, about 100 years ago, an American astronomer named Edwin Hubble, all of you know that name because of the Hubble telescope, named after him. Well, here he is in California at the Mount Wilson Observatory looking through the 100-inch optical telescope. And when he's looking out, he started taking photographs of different things. At this time, they thought that our galaxy was the entire universe. He actually discovered that these little dots out there were actually other galaxies. So what he did is he took photographs of them, and then they started analyzing the light itself. And this is basically all that astronomers can do. They can just look at light and analyze light, because they can't go to those places and do experiments. So they look at light. And light isn't just visible light that you see, but it's X-rays and microwaves and ultraviolet. There's a whole spectrum of it. So what they do is they figured out that every atom has a particular pattern. So in the lab, they take an atom. So in this case, they take iron and they shoot it through light and it goes through a machine. And you see on this side here, you have these white lines. That's emission. What that means is that white pattern is where there's blanks. And those blanks are particular in their order and spacing for every atom. Which means when they look through a telescope and they analyze the light from the sun, for instance, they can actually tell exactly what the sun is made from based on its light. But what Hubble noticed is that when he put it in there, even though the pattern was right, everything was shifted. They call this redshift. Because you see on one side they have red and you move this way they have blue. Everything was shifted a little bit to the red side. If it was shifted the other way, they call that a blue shift. But many of you have probably heard of the Doppler effect. That's the same thing. And it has to do with whether frequencies are moving towards or away. If it's blue shifted, it means that the source is coming towards you. If it's going away, it means that it's, if it's shifted to the red, it means it's moving away. So what he did is he started looking at it and he plotted it. And what he saw was that it looked like every galaxy was actually moving away from us. They were almost all redshifted. So what he said is, in fact, the further away you go, the faster they seem to be moving away. So the higher the redshift. So he said, and since they're all moving away from us, no matter what direction you're looking in, the universe must be expanding because everything's flying off into space away from us. It's getting bigger and bigger. So this is how they came to the conclusion that the universe is expanding. And so philosophically, if it's expanding, then if we go back in time, it must have been smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until you get hotter and denser. And then according to the math, when you go back far enough, you end up with what's called a singularity, which basically means all the atoms are touching each other. There's infinite temperature and density, everything. It's a mathematical concept. They can't actually envision it in reality, but in this type of math, they can deal with singularities without any issue. There are some major problems, however, with the expanding universe view, especially as far as extrapolating it backwards. One is we don't actually know what the redshifts do. He argued, that is Hubble, that these were Doppler effects. In other words, it's the galaxies were flying off in space. They actually don't believe that anymore. They actually believe they're called cosmic redshifts, which means that space is actually expanding and it's dragging along the galaxies with them. So it's actually space that is pulling the galaxies and it's space itself that is redshifted. However, a recent paper by a cosmologist documents that there are more than 60 different physical causes for redshift. And in his paper, he looks at 59 of them. So how do we know it's cosmic expansion? We don't. In fact, there's a major, major problem, a thorn in the flesh for them, and that is things called quasars. Quasars are they're called QSOs and different things. But basically, what they are is they're quasi-stellar objects. They don't know exactly what they are, but the signals coming from them are in the radio waves. And their redshift demonstrates, okay, when they look at the light, it's shifted way to the red. And they should be the fastest moving, furthest objects in the entire universe. However, an American astronomer who actually got booted out because he was disrupting the Big Bang community. So they took all his telescope time away in that. He actually just died in December. Halton Arp, he actually noticed that many of these quasars seem to be connected with galaxies. And so they weren't far back. The problem with that is if the redshift means it's something far away and fast moving, and yet these things are nearby, then maybe there's something wrong with our interpretation of the redshift. Okay, I won't go into any more detail on that. An Australian cosmologist, John Hartnett, he actually wrote a paper, and he actually wrote a longer version elsewhere. But he actually looked at all the data that scientists are using to say, is the universe expanding? And when you add it up, we don't know. It could be, it may not be. So if the number one proof for the Big Bang is that the universe is expanding and we don't even know whether it really is or not, you need to be careful with that. Now, Hartnett elsewhere argues in his model that the universe is expanding. But we don't know with 100% certainty. Okay, that's not to say it's not. And maybe it's best to, in fact, say it is expanding. But we don't know enough about it to build a model around that. Now, as Christians, we have no problem with the concept of the universe expanding. We can fit it into our model without any problems. Job chapter 9, verse 8 says of God, who alone stretched out the heavens. There are literally more than a dozen passages in the Bible that talk about God stretching out the heavens. Isaiah 42, verse 5. Thus says God the Lord, who created the heavens and stretched them out. So when God made the universe, He somehow stretched out the heavens, the universe. And so we can fit this into our model just as well as anyone else. The abundance of the light elements. In astronomy, the light elements mean those four elements that I mentioned, especially helium and hydrogen. And what they argue is that the Big Bang model actually predicted what the ratios of these would be, the abundance of the fact that most of the universe is made of hydrogen and helium. And they use this as one to say, ha, see, our model predicted it. Because a good model, scientific model, must have predictability. It must predict something. Well, they actually didn't predict it. They actually knew before the model was invented what the ratios were. And in fact, it was a man, Sir Fred Hoyle, who actually was a steady state theorist, so arguing for an eternal universe, who actually figured it out and fit perfect with his model. So the abundances of the elements actually aren't a prediction at all of the Big Bang, and it really isn't very strong evidence at all for them. All they did when they created their model is made sure that they put the right abundances in. But they could have put any ratio and it would have fit. So it's not a prediction at all. Okay, one more. This is the biggie. The cosmic microwave background. In 1964, two radio astronomers working for Bell Laboratories in the United States, they built, there was a satellite, a radio satellite that was built in New Jersey. And they were working on it, and they kept getting this hiss in it. And they couldn't figure out what it was that was causing this hiss. In fact, they thought it was pigeon droppings that were somehow throwing off the antenna. And it was picking up the stuff. However, they talked to somebody else and they actually figured out, and more than a decade later, they got a Nobel Prize for it. They published their work in 1965. They actually found out that this was coming from everywhere in space. And it was the same frequency. And so this was called the cosmic microwave background because the signal is in the microwave frequency. Okay, microwave is a type of light and it's in a certain wave frequency. And so the frequency that they found this in was in the microwave. Now, this was actually a prediction of the Big Bang theory, that if the Big Bang was true and there was this explosion, there should be in the furthest regions of space a little bit of this background radiation as kind of the leftovers of the explosion. As I mentioned, they got a Nobel Prize for it. They didn't know exactly what the measurements were. So NASA developed a satellite called COBE, the Cosmic Background Explorer, that went up and was supposed to be able to figure out what it was. Now remember, they're supposed to make predictions. They actually predicted the frequency wrong because they built this really, really expensive satellite, put it up in space. It took all these measurements and they didn't find anything. Now they got these math guys to do statistical analysis and they found what they were looking for. But they had to send another one in that was actually an order of magnitude, so times 10, more sensitive to see if they could find these things. So they made WMAP, the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe. Anisotropy means that it's not consistent. There are little deviations in it. So they're looking for these little deviations. So they sent WMAP up and it found them. It found them, and it came to a temperature of about 2.7 degrees Kelvin. Now, you've heard of Fahrenheit and Celsius. Kelvin's another scale, but instead of having negative, so we have below zero, it actually starts at zero. So absolute zero is somewhere around minus 273 degrees Celsius. That's 0 degree Kelvin. They're finding it at 2.7 degrees. So that's cold. That's like liquid nitrogen cold. And this was in the black body background. What that means is you look at the black parts in space. So what they're trying to find out is the black parts, what's the temperature? Everywhere they looked to one within about 100,000, the temperature was exactly the same. Exactly the same. Now this ended up being a huge problem. A huge problem for them. Just recently, so COBE and WMAP were sent by NASA. Planck was sent by the European Space Agency. And it is about 10 times more accurate than WMAP. And it came out with one and verified even better that, in fact, this is true. So they have found something. They have found a background that's everywhere. So what do we make of this? Is this proof for the Big Bang? This is actually the analysis from Planck. Now, it didn't look like that. It actually took more than a year to scan the whole visible universe. And they plot it on a sphere, like what you do with a map. So, you know, the Earth is a sphere, but when you make a map so you can see everything, you have to put it out. And that's what they did. And all those colors mean that there's temperature differences. Now remember, they're minuscule differences, but they can find them. The color in the center there, that really bright line, that's actually the Milky Way galaxy. So it's brighter because it's closer. So they have to, when they do their analysis, they have to remove that. But there are major problems with the Big Bang interpretation of the cosmic microwave background. So first of all, we've looked at their two big ones. The light elements, which was not a prediction at all, they just kind of stuck that in their model. And then the other one being the expanding universe, which could fit any model. So the big one is the cosmic microwave background. So what do we do with it? Well, first of all, we find that they have something called the horizon problem. Now they have a fudge factor to get around this, and by fudge I mean that they have an unknown that they can't even produce in a laboratory, but they're going to stick it in their model to make the model work. It's called inflation. We'll learn more about that next week. But the problem is that if the universe is the same temperature everywhere, that means that all that energy, all that matter had to interact to become the same temperature. It's like taking your coffee, you drop an ice cube in it. You have cold and hot. Over time, they reach equilibrium. Well, if the universe has reached equilibrium, it means that the hot and cold parts had to come together. The heat cooling, or heating the cool and the cooling. You see what I'm saying? The problem is the universe is too big. There hasn't been enough time. For instance, if the universe is 13.77 billion years old, then that means that light could only have traveled 13.77 billion light years in distance. Yet the universe is much bigger than that. So, for instance, if you plot the Earth in the center and say we can look 15 billion miles in that direction, or sorry, 15 billion light years in that direction, 15 billion light years in that direction, how can the stuff on the farthest side have come in contact with the stuff on the other side when they're 30 billion light years apart? There's no way for those to come in contact. The Big Bangers know this, and they come up with a way that is unprovable, inflation. And basically, that's that point where the universe expanded by more than a trillion, trillion times in an instant. They argue that it smoothed it out. Yet, you're going to see that there's huge problems with inflation. In fact, there's some articles coming out now where they're saying we better scrap inflation because the problems we had that we created inflation for are bigger now. So that's a huge problem that they can't answer. Now, we have our own horizon problem. So when I go through this, when we get to the appropriate parts, I'm going to show you that we have some problems as creationists as well. So this isn't going to be just a one-sided thing. Next thing is there's no gravitational lensing. This is huge. Think of it this way. You go to the beach and it's really, really hot out. You get your chair. You're going to look for a piece of shade, right? Well, shade happens because an object blocks the sunlight and it casts a shadow. What gravitational lensing is the fact that energy on the far side of an object, when it passes through, there should be a shadowing effect. Now, it's not like the shadow you see at the beach, but the premise is the same. One article by an astronomy professor said gravitational lensing is the gravitational optical effect whereby a background object like a distant quasar is magnified, distorted, and brightened by a foreground galaxy. In other words, whatever's in the back and it's shining its light, when it hits that object, it should have an effect by where you know that that is behind it. In this case, you think it would cast a dark shadow. It actually does the opposite. It actually brightens the object. And so you know that it's from behind. And this is so well known, it's all in the standard books now, that gravitational lensing should happen. And so the Big Bangers are out there looking for this. And so two technical papers looked at all the data from the WMAP satellite and looked at all these things and looked at it through mathematical analysis. And guess how many shadows they found? Hardly any. And the thing is, as far as the statistics are concerned, if there's one that doesn't, it negates all of them. Because the studies show that the background is supposed to be at the very, very, very back. And so everything should have a lens, have gravitational lensing. And yet, the net effect is zero. And there's a more recent paper that actually confirmed this, that in fact there's none. And they don't know what to do about it. Here was a Science Daily article where they actually interviewed Richard Liu, who was the chief author of the paper. And it says, "These shadows are a well-known thing that has been predicted for years," said Liu. "This is the only direct method of determining the distance to the origin of the cosmic microwave background." In other words, is it at the back or not? Up to now, all the evidence that it originated from as far back in time as the Big Bang fireball has been circumstantial. That's a nice way of putting it. Conjectured is probably more accurate. Our model demands it, therefore. If you see a shadow, however, it means that the radiation comes from behind it. The cluster here is clusters of galaxies that they're looking at. If you don't see a shadow, then you have something of a problem. Now, that should have been on all bold. Among the 31 clusters of galaxies that we studied, some show a shadow effect and others do not. Other groups have previously reported seeing this type of shadow in the microwave background. Those studies, however, use old data. But the data we use was specifically designed to study the cosmic microwave background. If the standard Big Bang theory of the universe is accurate and the background microwave radiation came to Earth from the furthest edges of the universe, then these massive X-rays are a type of light emitting clusters of galaxies nearest our own Milky Way galaxy should all cast shadows on the microwave background. In the technical paper, they actually tell you that statistically, if even one doesn't cast a shadow, then the whole thing falls. Because if it's at the back, then it must cast a shadow on all. Unless there's some reason for it, but they don't know any. Either it, he says, the microwave background isn't coming from behind the clusters, which means the Big Bang is blown away, or there is something else going on, said Lou. And he goes on to suggest some suggestions, but he says none of these are good suggestions. Now, what we should do is say, well, let's scrap it then. But they won't. Because remember, God's not allowed. Now, this one is more technical, but we're going to take the easy way out. Take the layman's version. There's no inverse Compton scattering by electrons. What this means is that when the radiation comes, because it's passing by stuff, the electrons should disrupt it, and basically you should get a blurry image. That's the best way of talking about it. There should be a blurry image. John Hartnett, says, according to the theory, the Big Bang fireball should be the most distant light source of all. Thus, all galaxies would be in the foreground, in front of it. Therefore, all the cosmic microwave background radiation must pass the intervening galaxies between the source and the observer here on the Earth. This radiation passes through the intergalactic medium between the galaxies in a cluster and is scattered by electrons through inverse Compton scattering. And there's a certain effect by two Russian scholars. When this happens, the path of the cosmic background radiation is interrupted and distorted. Problem. There's none. They can't find any scattering at all. There's zilch. Yet it should be everywhere they look. Fourth, it contains quadrupole and octupole modes. Now, this is really crazy. But thankfully, again, they have layman's terms versions. Basically, what this means is, imagine an orchestra. The monopole or the dipole is when they just look at the orchestra as a whole and they analyze it. So you're analyzing the sound. And you analyze the whole thing and the net effect is good. It's in tune. Yet when you go to higher levels, so maybe you're just looking at the brass instruments, you get another analysis and maybe it's not quite the same. Maybe they're a little bit out of tune, but when you put the whole thing together, you don't really notice. And then maybe you look at one brass instrument, let's say a saxophone, and it's way out of tune. So that's what the octopole would represent the saxophone. The quadrupole would represent the brass instruments, and the monopole and the dipole would represent the whole thing. According to the Big Bang theory, when they analyze the background radiation, yes, it should be the same temperature, but when they look at things, there should be no patterns at all. And when they looked at the monopole and the dipole, they were like, yes, no patterns. It's just what we thought it should be. As soon as they started looking at the quadrupoles and the octopoles, they came up with a big, big, big problem. And the big problem is they're all pointing somewhere. They're pointing in a certain direction. And guess where that direction is? Our solar system. You know what? Want to know what the conclusion is of this analysis? Is that all this microwave background, because there's no gravitational lensing, because there's no distortion through the inverse Compton scattering, because it's out of tune, it actually says that the cosmic background radiation is probably from our own solar system, if not our own galaxy. And guess what that means for the Big Bang theory? It means, one, either everything they're observing isn't the microwave background, the cosmic one, and that there is one, but you'll never be able to detect it because of all the stuff that's in front of us. Or it means there's no such thing as the cosmic microwave background. And if there isn't, then the whole Big Bang theory collapses. Folks, the reason for going through this with you in a really rapid fire, and next week we're going to look at really simple ways that the Big Bang is wrong. For instance, just the simple question, how does nothing become everything? How do you get a universe from nothing? The thing is, people are investing themselves into a theory that just doesn't work. Maybe they'll find ways to try to make it work, but right now, their so-called showcase pieces for it have insurmountable problems with them. John Hartnett recently, when he was talking about the analysis of the data that they're getting, with has the quadrupoles and the octopoles, was saying is what this actually means for Big Bangers is they may never, ever, ever know if there is a cosmic microwave background. Because everything's pointing to a local effect. So they may never be able to see past it. They can't send a spaceship to, 15 billion light years away to analyze it. By the way, if the universe is expanding, there's a reason why. If you can't travel to the speed of light, and it would take them 15 billion years to get there, the universe would have expanded by another 15 billion years. They would never, ever be able to catch up. In fact, they believe it's expanding so fast, they would never be able to get there. There's no way, in other words, to find out if there is a background radiation. And the theory demands it. So let me just summarize this. Because for many, it may be just absolutely overwhelming. Others, you might be saying, that's all. We began with a touch of epistemology by basically saying that, listen, it's a mathematical model. The Big Bang is a mathematical model. That's what it is. And it's based upon a philosophy. And that the fundamental pillar of that philosophy is no God. So if there's no God and the universe has to come into existence on their own, what do you expect? They got to come up with something. We also know that they can never prove it, despite what they say. Now, some of you probably heard on the news recently, they said that they've actually found proof for inflation. I'm going to actually show you that that's not really true. It was all over the news recently. Okay, and then the idea here of the three things that are supposed to be, the be-all end for the Big Bang Theory is expanding. Even if the universe is expanding, it doesn't mean the Big Bang is true. How do you know that it actually started as a singularity and then inflated into the expanding universe that we see? The steady state theory, which argues the universe is internal, had an expanding universe as part of its model as well. There's lots and lots and lots of models that can fit this in, including the biblical model as we looked at passages. In Job, Psalms, Isaiah, talking about God stretching out the heavens. So this one actually fits with multiple models. As far as the light elements, that's no proof at all because they already knew these things beforehand. So it doesn't help. And then finally, the cosmic background radiation here. We don't know that it's background radiation at all. In fact, the latest things are showing that it's probably, some say it may even be coming from the Earth itself. If not, it could be coming from the solar system or from our galaxy. That's not background radiation. It's a weak theory. Weak. Now, this morning all we've done is looked at the so-called three strongest points in favor of the Big Bang. And they're not very strong. Next week, in extreme layman's terms, we're going to see how weak, in fact, this theory is. And in fact, it's not science. Yet the world tells us that this is This happened. It's interesting. I mentioned the Sloan survey just in a quote. But one of the men who was part of this, so, you know, one of the cutting edge astrophysicists in the world, was in Australia giving a meeting. And he said that, well, you know, we got it all figured out except for a couple of small things. Well, those small things are things that they can't prove. That's like saying, I've never been in the pool, but I figured out swimming, so I'm an expert swimmer. Or those people that think they're expert drivers and have never been behind the wheel. There's no way for them to ever prove their model. They can't. It's impossible. And there's actually something that's getting worse for them, is because they're discovering, they believe the universe is bigger and bigger and bigger than they imagined. And there seems to be a cutoff point for where they'll be able to see. Once they're beyond that, they have no idea. So while they say the universe looks a certain way, that's only within the small area that we can see. Because of their so-called age of the universe, once you get past that 13.77 billion years, there's no way to see past that. Because light hasn't enough time to get here, according to their model. So if the universe is, now they're saying 100 to 200 billion light years, that means that most of the universe is way, way beyond what we could ever hope to see. So how do you know what it looks like? They don't. They don't. Now they're coming up with really crazy theories. And now they're coming up with theories like multiverses and things, which is just moving the problem back further. Okay, that's all the pain and suffering for this morning. But again, my point is to see that we're told something's fact when it's not. It's not fact. It's not at all. And yet the popular media tells us that this is fact. And yet mainstream scientists are saying that we need to scrap this. There was a recent article published in New Scientist where 30 of the leading astrophysicists in the world, written by Eric Lerner, argued for why we need to scrap the Big Bang, because it doesn't work. It's now been signed by more than 500 experts saying the Big Bang theory doesn't work, doesn't work, doesn't work. It's explaining unknowns by unknowns. So don't just think it's us creationists who are saying that there's a problem with this. More and more and more are. But the Big Bang theory is like trying to nail Jell-O to the wall. They just keep morphing it. If you learned about the Big Bang in school in the 1960s or the 1970s, that model is not the model they have today. In fact, they bear no resemblance except that you have a singularity that expanded. Now they have things called inflation, dark matter, dark energy. Three fudge factors, because they can't prove them to make their theory work. Yet, don't you remember when you were younger and they told you Big Bang was a fact then? It keeps changing and changing and changing and changing and changing. It's not falsifiable because they just keep changing it. But the fact that they have keep changing, it shows you the weakness of it. In fact, some atheist scholars have said it's actually not a theory. Heavenly Father, Lord, may we recognize that you created the world, the universe, and everything in it in 6 literal days, just as you said, not in a big bang out of nothing. Lord, this is what happens when people reject your word. They try to explain everything apart from you. But is the fool that says in his heart, there is no God. So, Lord, I pray that we will learn about these things, not just to tuck some more information in our brains, but that we would understand where people are coming from who have been blinded by the God of this age. That, Lord, maybe we would be able to bring a little bit of this to people and answer their questions and point them to you. For, Lord, what else matters than the eternity of the soul? So, Lord, thank you that it wasn't a big bang, but a big God. You spoke and the universe came into existence by your divine will. And Lord, indeed, the heavens declare the glory of God. So Lord, may you be honored and pleased with us. In Jesus' name, amen.